I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Over the course of his career, Matthew Dowd has experienced the political landscape from all angles, most famously as a strategist for Republican President George W. Bush, but also as a staffer for Missouri's Democratic Congressman Dick Gephardt. Now he's taken a more independent approach. Today, the ABC News analyst shares how he came around to political unaffiliation and provides thoughts on a new president who's struggling to get his own political house in order. We'll also ask if Dowd sees a quick way past partisan gridlock. Will it take a third-party candidate to break the chains, or would a Senator Matthew Dowd make any difference? We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Matthew Dowd is one of the best-known political strategists in the nation. He was, for instance, the chief strategist for George W. Bush's 2004 re-election campaign. Some of his early political work, though, came in Missouri and with Democrats. He worked to elect Joe Teasdale to the governor's office back in the 1970s and as a former staffer for Congressman Dick Gephardt. Today, though, he calls himself a political independent. He's something else, too, the chief political analyst for ABC News, and he has big questions about President Donald Trump. He'll be in town in a few weeks for an event with the American Public Square, and he's the author of A New Way, Embracing the Paradox as We Lead and Serve. Matthew Dow joins us now, and so nice to have you, Matthew. Thanks for taking some time.
Great to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
Of our president, you wrote a few weeks ago that while he has a chance to be a transformational president, quote, so far he's done little to unify the country except possibly against him and gained little respect around the globe. Do you still feel that way?
Yes, I think it's only gotten worse since I wrote that. And I think it's gotten even a bigger majority of Americans disturbed and disillusioned by his presidency. I think he had an opportunity when he first took office to bring the country along and to govern in a different way, but he has chosen not to thus far, and he's getting himself, I think, in a bad box where he has now solidified such a group of voters against him, it's going to be very hard for him to lead the country as a whole.
Why? What's going on here that's causing him to have trouble seemingly get his bearings here?
Well, it's fascinating. He seemed to have both offended. Democrats obviously don't like him, voted against him, but he's made it worse for himself in the course of his presidency by both the substance and the style of his presidency. And then now independents. I think the last poll I saw with 2/3 of independents disapprove of him. But he's now in a fight as well with the Freedom Caucus, which is a conservative wing of the House of Representatives, a conservative wing of the House of Representatives, he's now in a battle with. So he has made his share of people that support him smaller and smaller and smaller. The funny thing is I was looking back at historical numbers, and Richard Nixon, in the height of the Watergate hearings, had about a similar approval rating that Donald Trump has today.
Now that's startling. I didn't realize that, and that catches me up short a little bit.
Well, he's governed in a way, as I say, it's both style and substance. And obviously, as we all know, and everybody's watched on the news and heard the conversation, the Russian involvement in the election, and then Trump's relationship and its people's relationship with people from and around the Vladimir Putin, has caused obviously many questions to be raised about that, and obviously the Senate and the House are fixing to start hearings on that. So he's, as I said, he's got himself in a real box on his ability to unify the country.
You know, Matthew, he chose to begin his administration by trying to undo the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. He had promised that over and over again during the campaign that he was going to go that way. Was that the right first move for him in your estimation?
No, because it was automatically going to be polarizing when senators first do it. I remember after President Bush was reelected, there was a conversation among many of us, people in the White House and people that were outside the White House, about what should be the beginning of his second term. And I always thought that he should push immigration reform, which would help unify the country, help people solve a huge issue. But it was chosen to do Social Security, privatization of Social Security, which did almost the same exact thing that Donald Trump did. And from that moment on, George Bush was in a bad situation because he had put off the other party and had made independents nervous. And so I think he should have chose something that was more unifying, probably infrastructure.
Right, I was going to say.
Because everybody could have gotten behind that. Everybody in the country knows, and people in Missouri and Kansas, and everybody knows what we need to do something about our roads and bridges and waterways and all of that. And he chose not to. He chose to probably pick the most polarizing issue, and he wasn't successful at it.
ABC News analyst Matthew Dowd is my guest. So what needs to happen now to get this Russia thing off his back, Matthew? I mean, you've compared this issue to Watergate. The poll numbers suggest the American public is too. Why is that?
Well, first, I mean, we don't know, what embers of fire are there. We know there's a whole bunch of smoke. I mean, there's a ton of smoke related to it, and obviously it's something that has to be investigated to figure out if there was any involvement in all of this, in Russia's involvement in our election, and was there any contacts between people in the Trump campaign and Russia. That has to be looked at. But right now, a lot of smoke, and we have to see if there's a fire in this. I said the other day on ABC that, you know, if Trump wants to find out what his problem is or who his enemies are, he ought to buy a mirror. And because he's shot himself in the foot and in the arm and in the leg. He's done this himself. And so the solution is to actually become somebody he's not, to become somebody different than he is, govern differently in style, and do a set of priorities that could possibly unify the country. So far, he has chosen to do those things in the way he's acted for the last 19 months.
We'll talk more about this. We'll talk about Matthew Dowd's involvement in Missouri politics back in the day. I'm visiting for this segment and for the rest of the hour with ABC News political analyst Matthew Dowd. He's the author of a new book, A New Way, Embracing the Paradox as We Lead and Serve. Matthew, you were born to a good Irish Catholic family in Detroit. You were the third of 11 kids. How did you manage to get so off track by going into politics for a living?
You would know we were Irish Catholic by the fact that our names are Mary, Patrick, Matthew, Mike, Dan, Paul, Katie, Kelly, Beth, John, Steve.
You think?
So straight out of the, pick the name straight out of the Gospels. My parents, my mom and dad were never involved in politics, but were always very interested in it. So I took up sort of that interest from there. But what really precipitated was in the summer of 1973 in Michigan, I got fascinated by Watergate and the hearings. And I remember being on summer vacation up on Lake Michigan and not going outside and watching the hearings.
I do
from
too.
That day onward, I was like, this is what I want to get involved. It was just a fascinating moment. And from then on, I've sort of been involved.
Well, what was it about those hearings that just captivated you so much? What grabbed you?
Well, it was multiple things. It was the fact that here's the most powerful person in the world, Richard Nixon, who is being held accountable by Congress, both by Democrats and Republicans, interestingly enough. So they were holding hearings related to everything up, related to all of the controversies and scandals in that. And then you had two reporters who doggedly, and people forget this, it took almost 2 years between the time that the burglary first happened in 1972 and Richard Nixon resigned, who doggedly, day in and day out, without initially a lot of front page stories, I'm talking about Woodward and Bernstein, were able to sort of reveal all of this. And all of that together, I think, was a moment that actually was great for our country because it said how important Congress was, how important the free press was, and how you were able to hold somebody very powerful accountable.
You know, your parents were Republicans, but early on you were a Democrat. How did that go over?
Not well initially. I mean, I've always been principled. I got, I went to college and was, got interested, read a lot, was involved in a lot. And, just there were certain some politicians that attracted me. Dick Gephardt was one. I interned in his office while I was in college, and I volunteered. I was a volunteer on Governor Teasdale's campaign when he ran against
Kit Bond. I was going to ask you about that, sure.
I just was a volunteer on it, and they were sort of Democrats in an older mode they weren't really left. They were much more interested in how they were going to govern or lead from Missouri in a sort of much more bipartisan centrist way. And so it sort of led me to it. And so it was always a pick the person who I liked and who I valued. And that's how I ended up doing Democratic campaigns for almost 25 years.
I was going to say, when you work for Walkin' Joe Teasdale, that's kind of a classic election in Missouri history, given the fact that he upset the sitting governor at the time, Republican Kit Bond, who then rebounded 4 years later and ousted Teasdale in 1980. But how big of a kick was it to go to work for Joe Teasdale in 76 and pull off an upset like that, or at least help pull it off?
Well, and I wasn't. I was only 15 in 1976, so I was in Michigan then. I was there when he lost. So, though I obviously got to hear all of it and read all the stories and understand how it worked. I mean, I think it was a fascinating time. It was a fascinating time in America, and Missouri's been one of those states. So, it's more red now than it used to be. Mm-hmm. It was a classic state that sort of encompassed America, and I think it still does in many ways. It's such a diverse state, with the two obviously urban centers on each side, St. Louis and Kansas City, and a rural parts in the middle. And I think Missouri is going to be one of those states that I think is going to move back to probably be purple again. But it was a classic candidate and a classic state.
In 1999, let's fast forward here a little bit. You switched parties, Matthew. What happened?
Well, I'd done campaigns. I'd worked on there's a Democratic lieutenant governor in Texas, and I ran his two campaigns, a guy named Bob Bullock. And in Texas, mm-hmm. different than in most states, the lieutenant governor is very powerful, in many ways more powerful than the governor. He runs the state Senate, and he runs all the legislation there. And so without a Democratic lieutenant governor, you can't really get anything done. Bob Bullock was a classic old-style kind of LBJ-type politician, bigger than life. I got to be friends with him. And then when George W. Bush got elected governor, I got to know him and a lot of his people in that. And George W. Bush then worked with a Democratic speaker and worked with a Democratic governor to get a lot of great things done for the state on the economy, on education, on many different issues that he sort of did govern in a very bipartisan way. And so when I was thinking about it, and I had started a company and sold my interest in the company, then I was going to actually teach or do something, and I was called by then Karl Rove, and I'd talked to the governor and all that, and they'd asked if I would be interested. They knew I was a fan of his and be interested in working for him for his campaign for president. So then my sort of sabbatical or whatever became short-lived, and I ended up working with them for 5 years for the first campaign and then through the re-election campaign. But I was very hopeful that he would become president and then govern in the same way he was governor of Texas, which is work in a bipartisan way and bring the country together.
And Matthew, let's do this. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about your growing disillusionment with George W. Bush. We'll also talk about your new book that's coming out here in just the next few days, A New Way, Embracing the Paradox as We Lead and Serve. Matthew Dowd is my guest. He's the political analyst for ABC News, and he'll be in town on May 1st for American Public Square. It's an event at the Boulevard Brewing Company. Lots of conversation, probably lots of beer, too. You can't go wrong. More information at AmericanPublicSquare.org. Matthew, we were talking before the break about your growing disillusionment with President Bush once he was in office, his second term. You helped reelect him in 2004. What happened? What were you thinking during those years that caused you to pull away from not only the president, but from the Republican Party as well?
So it's two things, big things, one broad and one more personal. So the first one was, as I was saying, as I got attracted to him because I thought he would bring in the divisiveness and the polarization in Washington, it ended up getting worse. Mm-hmm. And we ended up not being governing in a manner that I thought brought the country together. And I thought really that could be really done in the second term in the aftermath of all that and the reelect. It didn't happen. So that was my hope. That's why I went to work for him. That didn't happen. And I thought you could blame a lot of people, but ultimately the president is the president. That's one. And the second thing is my oldest son ended up enlisting and being sent to Iraq for two tours of duty in that war. And it all got me thinking about that war and the false pretenses we went into that war and not being accountable for that. And so those two big things caused me to have a rather public break with the president on the front page of the New York Times. And then as I watched, having worked for both political parties, I decided the problem ultimately in this country right now is that people feel like they have a choice between two alternatives they don't really want. And I believe we need more choices. We need more people that are independent-minded to run. And so I've taken a step back from those two political parties and thought and tried to push, and that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, A New Way, was that we need to have a different way that we approach politics and governance in this country, because the two dinosaur parties aren't doing it in a way that brings the country together.
But, you know, lots of people over the years have talked exactly about what you just said, and yet it doesn't seem to happen, that the two parties remain as strong as ever. Why is that?
Well, I mean, first, is, I mean, we've had a binary choice in this country for a long period of time, the choice between the D and the R, and it's been that way. People feel like it's that way. It's almost in many ways psychological, feel like I have to choose between these two. But we're in a time because of technology and because the barriers to entry of people to enter into politics is now much lower. You don't have to, so that the gatekeeper quality of each political party isn't as strong as it's been. But you watch things like Uber, Lyft, Amazon, Airbnb emerge in marketplaces that were dominated by a few players and have been successful. The last two places in our country that have been innovated, real fundamentally, are our politics and our government. And I believe we're at a time now where candidates all over the country can start running independently of those two political parties and then succeed. I think the problem in the past has been, it's always been a top-down. Let's go find a presidential candidate who's an independent and run. That's not going to work. It has to be bottom-up. It has to be people in Kansas City and in St. Louis and in Detroit and in Austin, Texas, run locally, run for state rep, run for city office, run for statewide office, and then it will build nationally. And I think that's what we're about to see.
You know, in your new book, which you just alluded to, A New Way, Embracing the Paradox as We Lead and Serve, you offer a leadership model that's based on embracing a set of paradoxes, I guess, like fear and love and confidence and humility. Some might be thinking you should have published this a couple of years ago, Matthew, but what led you to write it?
Well, I've been taking notes and thinking about this for almost a decade of, like, that we need something new. And over the last couple of years, it's real. My thinking has been more formed, and I've come to the point, it's not only a false choice that we get between two parties that people are dissatisfied with, but we're forced into false choices along the way in a lot of different parts of our life. And this book wasn't designed purely for political reasons. It was designed for even of us, all of us that lead and serve in our own lives, whether it's in relationships, whether it's in neighborhoods, whatever it happens to be, and not being pushed into this idea you have to pick from one or the other, that there is a different way, there's a different way to try to choose, whether it's in our relationships or it's whether it's broadly in our politics. And so that's sort of my thinking was formed with that, and then I sort of laid that out. I've tried to lay that out in a way. It's try to what I try to do when I'm speaking on air, that there is a different way to approach this that doesn't have to be the standard way that people have become incredibly frustrated with.
You're big on the idea of public service. I mean, these days, do you feel like a lone voice in the wilderness, when it comes to that idea and what you're talking about here?
Well, I believe that the pendulum has swung so far to one way that it's going to swing back. I think it's going to need to be pushed a little bit by some of us who want this, that it's going to go back to a sort of humble servant leader model, the model that was actually designed by our founding fathers and mothers in our country, where you serve the country, and then you go back home, that that's a level of humility coupled with strength that we have. And so I think there's a number of people out there, I talk to them all every day, all the time, of people all around the country that want this. And so I think we can actually in many ways be grateful for Donald Trump, because he's highlighted the problem we face in America. And I think the solution to address it is this whole idea of servant leadership that I think many people, I mean, there's people all over the country that are forming social entrepreneur enterprises to deal with transportation, to deal with housing, to deal with a lot of things. So I think it's coming, but some of us are going to have to push it so people believe it can be a reality.
ABC News analyst Matthew Dowd is my guest. What about yourself as an example, Matthew, because your name's getting kicked around quite a bit as a possible U.S. Senate candidate from Texas in 2018. How about it?
Well, a number of folks have talked to me about it, on both Democrats and Republicans and independents who are frustrated with the leadership coming out of the state, Texas, and in Washington, D.C. And so I'm thinking about it. I don't know if I'm going to. It's one of those things I have to make a decision of how to use my voice. Everybody out there and anybody listening can use their voices in many different ways. It could be running for office. It could be working on campaigns for people running for office. It could be starting something in their local community to solve a problem. There's many ways to use our voices. People in the media use their voice. So I'm trying to think of what's the best way to use my voice. And it's a very personal decision in my life, because I know it'll affect my life, that I have to decide. So I'm going to make that decision in what's best use of what's in my mission.
Well, this week in Washington, Matthew, you know as well as anyone, we'll see a vote on U.S. Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch. Lots of concern that Republican leaders in the Senate will use the nuclear option to end debate, and forcibly so. What does that portend for the future if that were to happen?
Well, I think it would be a mistake. I mean, I think that one of the reasons why we've had this for the Supreme Court, that at least 60 votes, it means you're going to have a justice that's going to be acceptable to most of America. And if we lose that, then I think we're going to have a Supreme Court that becomes as polarized as every other branch. I believe one of the strategies that I think the Democrats should do is they should go to the Republicans and said, listen, we will not, you know, we will allow people to vote their will and allow people to vote as they way about the Justice Gorsuch after the Russian investigation is complete. And when that's done, then we won't filibuster the nominee. We will not filibuster the nominee. That's a deal that I think most of America would like. Let's do this. Let's investigate it. Let's put a pause on this hearing and on this vote. And then once that is done, then we won't filibuster.
Why are you linking those two, the Russian investigation and Neil Gorsuch?
Well, because I think that what's happened now is that there's a whole part of America that doesn't think Donald Trump, because of what happened with Russia, there's questions of his legitimacy. And until that is discovered, until we know for sure what happened, I think there's going to be all those questions around it. So putting somebody on for a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court, he could be on there for 25 or 30 years, seems a little premature until we know what's going on. And the second thing is there's also questions about whether or not Republicans are going to actually do a serious investigation about this issue. We've seen in the House, the chairman of the House committee on this, who's had meetings with the White House, doesn't seem to be that interested in investigating. So I think it would push to do the right thing. It would push each side to do the right thing.
Back in your state of Missouri, Senator Claire McCaskill on Friday announced that she would oppose Gorsuch and seek to filibuster his nomination. She's on the ballot for re-election next year in a state that went for Donald Trump by 19 points last November. If you had been advising McCaskill, Matthew, would you have recommended a similar course of action?
Well, I think she was going to face a difficult re-election anyway, because as we talked earlier in the conversation, Missouri has become a redder state.
Yeah.
So it was going to be difficult for her anyway. I would have suggested just what I laid out. I would have suggested, say, listen, I'm going to vote. I'm not going to vote filibusterist. I will consider this nomination in a serious way, but only after the investigation is complete and we're satisfied that everything is fine with that. That's what I would have said to her, is to sort of say, and I'll decide then what's the vote in. I won't push that we'll filibuster it. I'll encourage my other colleagues not to filibuster this, to allow the nomination to come to a vote on the floor. But that's what I would advise. Obviously, she's doing this out of principle, because it makes it a much more difficult election for her, having done this in a state like Missouri. But if she had asked my advice, that's what I would have said.
In your columns that you can see at ABC News, you said the president is making a mistake by tweeting so much. What's your thinking?
Well, I think Twitter is a good thing. It's a modern, obviously, way to communicate. But the problem is, as president of the United States, there's a lot more substantive conversations going on. And I think not only you can't get everything in a 140 character of 140 characters to say what you really mean, he also does it in a way that's exceedingly off-putting to people. The president of the United States, elected by the nation, ought to be the person that brings the country together, ought to be the person that gets everybody together and figures out the best way forward on all these issues that concern us. What he does and says on Twitter actually has the reverse effect. It offends people, it pushes people away, and actually isn't substantive, any substantive part of a conversation on the important issues that we face.
Lots of news in recent days about the increased role of Donald Trump's daughter in the administration, along with her husband, Jared Kushner. Is the president just asking for trouble by involving his immediate family members in such prominent roles?
Well, I think that's a great way to see it. I think it just raises the specter. I'm not one that says automatically it's going to be a huge problem. It just raises a concern. It makes people feel like he's surrounding himself with family members and people that won't tell him no, or won't hold him accountable, or won't tell him he shouldn't be doing things in a certain way. So as a president, you already get in a bubble, and if you bring people on that do that. And the second thing, because of all these business relationships, it raises serious questions about how decisions are going to be made and if there's a personal interest in those decision-making. Mm-hmm. So I think the only thing he does, it makes it harder for him to lead the country and be respected not only domestically but internationally.
What do you make of Missouri Governor Eric Greitens, his multiple trips to Washington since he was inaugurated in January to meet with top officials in the Trump administration, including Vice President Mike Pence?
Well, I mean, I think everybody, this is the President of the United States. This is an administration that has a lot of power, has a lot of, they're govern the country. So I think it's important for people to meet with them, sit down with them, have develop a relationship with them. But I think it's also ones where you just have to take a stand on certain things and be willing to confront the administration and not just do it for some power basis to sort of get to help you in your own on your own stuff, is to basically have meetings with him and then say, this is what I agree with him on, this is what I disagree with him on, and this is the type of leader I want him to be. Going in and sitting down with him and never saying a word only empowers people, enables people in bad behavior. And so if leaders should meet with them, but they also should say where they're going to hold Donald Trump accountable.
Well, Matthew, I really appreciate you taking some time to visit with us today. Again, Matthew Dowd's new book, A New Way, Embracing the Paradox as We Lead and Serve. You can see him on May 1st for an event involving American Public Square. More information on that at AmericanPublicSquare.org. Matthew, thanks again.
So great to be here with you, Steve. Thank you.
You bet.